The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Sci-Fi for Me Radio. This is H2O. Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And our topic has been hijacked for this week. I know last week we were talking about how we could talk this week about the nostalgia, all of the shows of the 80s and 90s coming back as reboots and new movies
right.
and projects and stuff. And then...
A thing happened.
Yeah. And we talked about it a little bit on Level 117, which is our Marvel show, our Marvel podcast. But let's get a little bit more in-depth on the idea here of Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So for the kids at home who somehow managed to miss this little piece of information.
And I have a thought on that, so...
What basically seems to have happened is that Sony, who has the rights to make Spider-Man movies, and has made, as of this count, 5 Spider-Man movies.
In the last 13 years.
Yep. And has discussed, who announced not that terribly long ago, to make... quite a few more Spider-Man-related films.
Yeah.
With the Sinister Six being probably the next big one.
Yeah, and then Venom was on the table.
Right.
And then this thing called Glass Ceiling, which was supposed to be a female lead
thing.
Right. Uh-huh. And at one point, I'd heard rumors even that there was going to be an Aunt May movie.
Well, interestingly enough, and we can talk more about that in a bit, but depending on which version of Aunt May... In which
Spider-May?
Well, Aunt May is kind of a badass in some versions. So she's not just the frail woman. No, the 616 Aunt May is, you know, she's
the Aunt May that everybody knows.
Well, yeah, she's also Aunt May the walking target. Kind of like Robin the boy target and Robin the boy hostage.
Yes.
So it's been and quite a few of us were sitting there looking at the numbers and the response. For the second Andrew Garfield Spider-Man film, and wondering, has Sony lost their mind? We're certainly already questioning DC's plan for releases.
Right.
Even Marvel's plan is really ambitious.
Yes, but the big difference is that Marvel has proven that they are capable of doing it.
Right, but we've mentioned a few times on the show the possibility of the fact that we might be reaching, you know, we could be approaching at some point superhero saturation point, right?
Yeah.
And so when you consider that, you know, we're looking at 3 major studios rolling out, you know, what was looking to be like 3 big superhero films every year.
Until 2020.
For the next, yeah. I mean, that was really, that's amazing. And for a genre fan, that's fantastic if they're all good.
Yeah, that's the key. And that's something we've talked about before, story.
Exactly.
If the story doesn't work, then there's no point in making the movie.
And for all the blasting of Man of Steel, I would actually put the Man of Steel script against Amazing Spider-Man 2,
hang on,
and say that it's, you know, a lot of the same story problems. I mean, there's just Amazing Spider-Man. I enjoyed Man of Steel because I went in with no preconceptions. I enjoyed the second Garfield Spider-Man film because I had no preconceptions.
Ooh, wouldn't that be a cool team up, Garfield and Spider-Man? Garfield the cat.
I think we're looking at a very strange film.
Throwing lasagna at the villains?
As long as Bill Murray does the voice of Garfield the cat.
I don't know. He could be the villain.
That seems to be his
thing now.
But anyway, we're looking at really ambitious plans, and yet we had a second Spider-Man film for the reboot of Spider-Man that did. I mean, it make no mistake. You know,
It made money. Yeah,
but it didn't make the kind of money that they wanted it to make.
Right. It wasn't a billion-dollar baby like they wanted from Marvel. The interesting thing, and you look at the sequence of events, and there are rumors that fly back and forth, and we hear all of these different things that they were, you know, Sony's going to do this, and Marvel's going to do this, and Spider-Man's here, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really intensify until this Sony hack.
Right.
And after that, we got a bunch of emails that cropped up that revealed that Sony and Marvel had been in discussions about sharing Spider-Man
right.
at one point. And, of course, Sony was like, no, that's all falling through. It's not going to happen. There's no deal. And Marvel even said, we don't have any kind of an agreement in place. There's nothing there. And a lot of people pointed out that when Kevin Feige got up there at El Capitan Theater and announced Phase 3,
mm-hmm.
that would have been the point where he could have announced some sort of a Spider-Man deal if there was one in place.
Right, and he would have broken the internet.
And they had asked him about that. Mm-hmm. They'd asked him about Benedict Cumberbatch. And at that point, Cumberbatch hadn't been confirmed as Doctor Strange. And Feige said, anything else, anything that you don't hear here, mm-hmm. anything that I don't tell you is either an unconfirmed rumor. It's either a rumor or it's something we can't confirm or we can't even address it. It would just not. So at that point, there was no there. There was mm-hmm. no Spider-Man deal. And then Monday night, I guess it was about 8:30 Central, this thing dropped and blew up the internet.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there's all of these headlines. Spider-Man's going to the MCU. I'm like, what? What?
Well, and we had a pretty significant studio head step down.
Right.
And I think that may have been the last piece.
I'm wondering, because this is still a Sony deal.
Mm-hmm.
We have Amy Pascal step down as co-chair of Sony Pictures Entertainment.
Right.
And all of this Spider-Man stuff was her baby.
Mm-hmm.
The Sinister Six thing, Glass Ceiling, all of these other spider-related projects, that was all her bailiwick. I'm wondering if part of her deal to step down, I wonder which one of them, between Sony and Pascal, which one of them held Spider-Man hostage in order to get her the producing deal.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah. We won't fire you. We'll let you step down, but you have to let Feige co-produce the Spider-Man movies. Or, I tell you what, I'll step down and erase your problem, but you have to give me Spider-Man and let me go back to Marvel and bring Feige in. Those are the two scenarios that I see. One, somebody said to the other one, this is how it's going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
And Feige and Marvel have to come in and make it work. Because in either scenario, you've got, I think, a requirement of bringing in Marvel Studios at least to consult. Now, the deal as it was played out in the internet, as it was spelled out in the internet Monday night, was that Sony retains distribution rights
mm-hmm.
and marketing and creative control. Which, if you've got Feige, if you've got Kevin Feige as a co-producer,
mm-hmm.
and you have Marvel Studios somehow involved,
mm-hmm.
I think Sony's amount of creative control is going to consist mainly of,
Well, I think
whatever you want to do. Because they have to recognize that Marvel is the only one out there that's done it right consistently enough.
I think you just hand it to them
and say, okay, go. You know what you're doing. Go do it.
Well, I think it's PR. I think it's a face.
It's face saving.
It's face saving.
That's
like
what it is.
It's like, hey, we've got creative control,
right?
And we are creatively.
But by the way, Kevin Feige is co-producing.
But
we have control.
Well, we have creative control, and we are creatively controlling our decision to let Marvel do it.
Yeah.
You know,
and a lot of people see it that way. A lot of people see this as Sony caving and bringing Marvel in because Sony is the acknowledgement that Sony recognizes they don't know what they're doing with this character. They don't know how to do this character. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
See, I don't think that is the case.
The perception is that Sony finally gave up.
Yeah, I'm not saying it can't be the case, because it could be, but to me,
I think it's part of it.
Well, I think it's a factor. I think it's concern about the direction of the character in the films. I think it's not because, to be perfectly honest, if you were to hold these two Spider-Man films up against a significant chunk of the superhero movies that have been out over the last 25 years.
Yeah, they're not terrible.
They're not terrible films. If we had not had the Tobey Maguire, the first two Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films, you know, the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, there would not be a whole as much backlash against the Garfield pictures as we've gotten. Because he's perfectly fine in the part. I think, I mean, honestly, I would love to see him continue to play the part.
Well, a lot of people would disagree with you. There is that sector of the internet that thinks that that Andrew Garfield's portrayal of Peter Parker has him too hip, too cool for school.
Yeah, well,
he's a little bit more. He's a little bit more fitting in-ish.
Well, but again,
than
we're
Peter
looking.
Parker
yeah, but
would
we're,
be
okay. But we're looking at. The Andrew Garfield Spider-Man films are much, much closer to the Ultimate Universe Spider-Man.
Right, the Ultimate Spider-Man. The Peter Parker Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right, and if you look at that Peter Parker, he's not the social outcast that the Earth 616 Peter Parker was. And to be perfectly honest, Tobey Maguire wasn't either.
He was more of one than Garfield.
He was more withdrawn.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, for
Maguire's Parker felt to me a little bit more put upon.
Well, but
by circumstances
also I think
and
in,
life
if, when,
and
when,
all that.
When Peter Parker, when the character first emerged, when Stanley and those and Ditko and those guys were really making that character be something.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
Yeah, and you know, he was the teenage outcast. He was the one who
he was the geek. Well, guess what? The geeks run the world. The geeks run Facebook. The geeks run Google. The geeks run, you know, the geeks run the movie studios.
Did you see Google Spot the robot dog?
Uh-huh. So I think that it's I don't know.
And I'm not saying that it has to be Peter Parker from the 1960s.
No, but I'm saying that a lot of everyone's talking about how, you know, it should be the put upon Peter Parker. Well, the problem is the put upon Peter Parker. I said that and it actually came out. I'm not trying to try and say it again.
Said it five times.
No. I think the problem is that character really hasn't existed even in the main comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the fact that, you know, they keep putting the character through
Except
hell.
That's the perception of what Peter Parker should be in the general knowledgeable,
but the character hasn't been there for 20 years.
That's true. Now, and there are others on that same internet thing mm-hmm. who think that Miles Morales should be the Spider-Man.
See, honestly, and if you're gonna change the character, if you're not gonna let Garfield continue to play the part, don't recast Peter Parker. Bring in Miles Morales.
Yeah, but you can't have Miles Morales without Peter Parker dying.
You can because.
Miles Morales is a legacy character.
Well,
if he doesn't,
Miles Morales is a legacy character for the Ultimate line. Now,
was still,
but this is the MCU. The MCU, the characters are all different. None of these characters actually fit the 616 universe. You know, exactly with the MCU. So, you look at Hawkeye, you look at Thor. I mean, the basics are there, right?
Right,
but
and you do have the Fantastic Four is basically the ultimate Fantastic Four showing up at the Fox movie.
Right, and which is a whole other thing. But I think that the opportunity to bring in, if they're looking to take a break from the Peter Parker version of Spider-Man, what we don't need is another reboot.
No,
we don't need a third actor.
Everybody has said we don't need another origin story.
Right. So
no matter what it is.
So if we're going, but if you're going to do an origin story, you do it with a new Spider-Man. And quite frankly, there is a chunk of the audience who is familiar with Miles Morales. If you were looking at purely from a bringing in a new character,
mm-hmm.
a Spider-Man. That you've kind of that it is established and very popular in the comic book world, and not to mention the fact you've got a young actor of color you can bring in.
Yeah,
there's some real possibilities to it. Not to mention Miles Morales is just a cool character. So,
well, okay, let me ask you this: what would prevent them from bringing both of them in? Because if now Marvel has access to all of the Spider-Man related characters because of this deal, and it's a pretty good assumption that they do. There's nothing that says you only have to have Peter Parker's Spider-Man.
Honestly,
you could have the whole Spider group.
Ultimately, I think they should. I think that if you're going to bring in Marvel on this, take advantage of the fact that Marvel has got an established where you've got, you know, three films or more with each of these characters that they've already got. So you've got Captain America films, you've got Iron Man films, you've got Thor films. They're staying away from Hulk films.
Which is a shame.
Yes and no.
I know why they're doing it, but it's still, it would be fun to see
it. Oh, it would be. Yeah, it would be. And I think that it would be.
If they do it right.
Yeah, there's the kicker.
That's it.
Because neither one of the two Hulk films was terrible. The problem is,
I liked the second one.
I liked both of them. I liked them. I thought Ang Lee's Hulk was, it's a flawed movie, but he tried something. He tried to do something interesting. And whether it did, you know, I give a lot of credit to filmmakers who are trying.
I was with that one all the way up to the point where the dad metamorphosized. Once we got to that point where he transformed, that's when I came out of the film.
I think the biggest problem with that is that, you know, they were basically taking something from the comic book where we established that Bruce Banner was an abused child. and that a lot of the anger issues that he has come out of that abuse.
Right.
And they forgot that the worst thing in the world is not that your abusive parent actually is a real monster. Is that they're a very, very ordinary monster.
Right.
The banality. The fact that they're not something that mutates into a giant creature that, you know, could do all these things. No, it's just a normal person that's that much of a monster.
Right. And that makes it even worse that you have this thin veneer of civility.
Right.
And propriety and polite and all that. And then underneath that lurks this beast. And when they transformed the dad, I mean, granted, he was a little creepy going into it.
Oh, sure.
But
it's McNulty.
When the transformation happened, that's when the story lost me.
Well, you know, I think again, I get it. I get it from a big spectacle point of view. But in terms of the emotional core up until that point, that emotional core, I think, was holding together pretty well.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, I think it was a really interesting idea that didn't quite work.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the second one quite a bit.
And the second one, a lot of people are referencing that because if you look at the beginning of The Incredible Hulk with Norton, you have the origin in the title sequence.
Right.
You have that, and it was very nice to see that it was the Bixby origin.
Oh, you kind of have to. I mean, really.
And you have that, and the story gets told, and the origin is done in 2 minutes and done, finished.
Sure.
And we can tell our story. I think that would be what you'd want to do with a Spider-Man movie in the Marvel universe.
Especially, well, if you're doing a Peter Parker, yes. If you're doing a Miles Morales, then you have a little more flexibility.
Well, because whichever Spider-Man is going to show up, he's going to show up in Civil War first.
Honestly, I hope it's wrong.
He can't show up. It's too late for him to show up in Age of Ultron.
Oh yeah,
because that's done.
Well, he might. Well, okay, he might be able to do a cameo. They might shoot a little bit and put him in.
Might, but the other one after that,
you see him descending down in the background.
Yeah,
from on a web, you know, that little upside down thing.
Or he shows up as soon as he could be in the end credits piece.
Yeah,
they could shoot him there. But then the other one, the next one is Ant-Man, and I don't think he would fit. No, he wouldn't fit in there. After that is Civil War.
Here's my problem with bringing him into Civil War is that we're going to get that stupid unmasking scene if they bring him into Civil War.
It depends on how they tell that story.
Well, okay.
Because that assumes that Peter Parker, from the beginning in the movies, that would assume, because in the book, Peter Parker originally agrees with Tony Stark. Unmasks and then eventually flips and sides with Captain America and decides that this is a wrong thing.
Right.
He doesn't necessarily have to follow that same path in the movie. He could agree with Tony Stark before unmasking and then could flip before he reveals his identity.
I don't think it's earned.
Well, my biggest issue
ultimately is that I thought it was a dumb decision in the context of the actual comic book, because in the Marvel universe of comic books, people wear masks because it keeps their families becoming targets,
right?
Especially in the Ultimate line, where everyone seems to know everybody's secret identity anyway.
Well, and even in real life, you look at the real life superhero groups that are around the country. You know, people who, you know, Neighborhood Watch or whatever.
Sure.
There are some of them who wear masks specifically to hide their identity so their families aren't targets. So it's not necessarily just a book thing.
Right.
It's a real life thing.
Right. So it was very, very foolish.
I think,
and poor writing, honestly, in my opinion, in the comic book. In the movies, we have most of the superheroes in the MCU don't have secret identities.
And that could be the entry point for Civil War, because suddenly you get this kid, this somebody wearing a mask,
mm-hmm.
and that could add fuel to the whole, well, why is he wearing a mask? We need to know who he is type of thing. And he basically becomes the catalyst for Stark to sit there and say, we need to keep track of everybody because look, now they're showing up out of the woodwork.
Well, I think
and we never have that scene where he has to decide whether to unmask or not. You could have that at the very beginning. He's like, I'm not going to take off my mask. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
The reason I wear the mask is because of this. And maybe Steve Rogers comes to Spider-Man's side.
Right.
And that informs the argument. I mean, no matter what they're going to do, they're going to have to retool the whole movie anyway now.
Because
Black Panther was going to fill in that role Spider-Man
played. If they bring in Spider-Man into Civil War.
I don't see where else they're going to do it.
Well,
where would they bring him in?
It's what you do is you have Sony actually makes a Spider-Man movie.
Which doesn't come out until 2017.
Well, but
and
you,
we do have the official word that he's going to show up in a Marvel movie before his next solo film.
Yeah, I just don't.
And there's not that many choices.
Okay, but again, story.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, he has to fit. But
I think at this point, putting him in Civil War, from everything we've heard about Civil War,
mm-hmm.
all right, when you put Spider-Man in, I think you're ending up with a fairly massive retooling to get him in there at this point, from what we've heard. And that's fine. I mean, you know, they don't, you know, we could have just heard that these are the ideas they're playing with on the script, and they don't even have any of the details really worked out, right?
Well, plus you have to consider, too, that the guys doing the Captain America movies, they're the ones that have been vocal about wanting to do a Spider-Man story.
Sure.
So it you know, all of the little breadcrumbs that are in place lead to the conclusion that somehow Spider-Man will be in Civil War. Now, whether or not he plays a prominent role, or if he's just there and gone, that's up in the air.
Yeah, I would personally rather have him be a small piece, and then make that new Spider-Man movie mm-hmm. with Marvel's involvement. So that, you know, it fits the larger big picture and it feels more of a kind. Whoever you, whether it's Garfield or Morales or a whole new actor playing the part or whatever it is.
Yeah. And more than likely it's going to be a new actor.
Probably. So you end up with something that feels more like it's, I don't know. I mean, to make the only way that it works, if you make him be the impetus for who we have this masked character,
mm-hmm.
is if he's not the only one.
Right.
If you end up with all of a sudden these new superheroes who are coming out of the woodwork.
Well, Black Panther.
Right, but I mean two. That's not enough. That's not enough to justify it. I think that whatever Age of Ultron is setting us up for how Tony Stark is feeling about whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever the trigger is. Age of Ultron, which it's coming out of Age of Ultron. Really. And it's probably the fact that I don't know, Ultron.
could be.
Ultron with the, you know, the killing and the things. If it's just Spider-Man, it's like, okay, so it's some kid, clearly.
Well, now, the other possibility is that, we mentioned the Spider family.
Mm-hmm.
There's still time to put Jessica Drew in Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And so you have Spider-Woman show up there. She wears a mask.
Mm-hmm.
You have Silk. She wears a mask.
Sure.
If Spider-Gwen shows up, I doubt she would, but she would be another one in a mask. But all of this, the entire Spider family are all masked.
Oh, yeah, Black Cat and Prowler and, you could spin this whole thing out.
Yeah, if you had all of those show up in a relatively short amount of time.
But the problem there is that I think when you are doing your ensemble pictures, like your Avengers and, Captain America 3 is already an ensemble picture because it's going to be Cap and Iron Man and Black Widow,
Falcon.
Black Panther.
And now Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, you're already looking at a big thing. So it's really, really hard to tell everybody's story the right way without them being secondary characters.
Yeah.
When you've got so many people. I mean, you look at one of the things that made Avengers work so well was the fact that they actually had a balance for these characters having screen time. Everybody got a piece of the story.
Yes.
And that is something that we keep hearing about how many of the Justice League are showing up in Batman versus Superman, and it's everyone's going, how are they going to get all these people in here? It's like, well, Marvel did it with Avengers,
but Marvel had a plan going into Avengers.
But you and I have talked about before. The fact is that honestly, the only way half these characters are showing up in Batman versus Superman is that they're showing up as a cameo.
Has to be.
They're going to show up at the end of the movie, and it's going to be like, "And you, who are you people? Well, we're the Justice League.
We're the Super Seven.
Who's a what? Yeah. Because in all fairness, what they're trying to do with everything that they've talked about. What they're trying to do is, get a new Batman in the mix that fits inside this new DC universe.
Yeah.
Tell the next part of Superman's story. Bring in people like Lex Luthor. Bring in the you're getting the pieces here for the bigger DC universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't from a story standpoint, you only have so many people you could have on screen before things get muddy,
right?
And Marvel. Luckily, I mean, how many people are in the Avengers?
Six, seven?
Yeah, that's...
Well, no, because you got to count Loki in there as well.
Well, yeah, so he's the bad guy.
Cap, Nick Fury, Thor, Maria Hill, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Hulk, Iron Man. That's eight.
Mm-hmm.
Loki makes nine.
Mm-hmm.
Would you count...
Coulson?
Selvig?
No, you can't.
Selvig's 10, Coulson's 11.
Yeah, so everybody.
Because all of them get moments.
But the thing is that all of those characters have been established beforehand. They'd all had bigger pieces in other stories, right? So by the time they got to Avengers, we weren't expecting to have, it's the Captain America show starring the Avengers, It was, it's Cap and Iron Man and the Hulk and all these, so you had these pieces, but you had these other larger pictures to deal with. You had the Iron Man movies.
You had already had the solo films that fed into ensemble.
Exactly.
So whereas with DC, you're going backwards. You've got the ensemble that are going to feed into the solo
films. So realistically, the only way the DC can be doing this, and I will be stunned, no matter whatever concerns we have about DC, I mean, this is storytelling 101, and there's no... I could not imagine that somebody would let them do this in the food chain.
They probably haven't read Robert McKee's book.
I would be stunned if someone in the Warner Brothers food chain who sits there and who goes, "We've made a few movies before out of this studio, you know that, right?" Mm-hmm. Would sit there and let them do it. You have to have your A storyline, and your A storyline has a relatively small number of characters to deal with because that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Because that's how we read, that's how we watch, that's how stories are told.
And all of the other ancillary stories, the B plot and the C plot and the D, mm-hmm. however many you have, all have to integrate into that A main plot.
Right.
In order for the whole thing to move in the same direction.
So if you could, and honestly, you could do this. You've got your Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne stories going on. which are your Batman and your Superman stories, because we know we're getting Bruce Wayne a lot in this film.
Yeah,
we're getting Clark Kent a lot in this film. So we got our Batman Superman conflict, and be in the background. You could have pieces where you could sit there and see, you know, here's Jason Momoa showing up, and he's, you know, you don't know who he is. I mean, you know who he is, but I mean, right. They don't establish who he is, and you know, he keeps popping up at various things, and there's a through line, right?
Sure.
And then, you know, this woman Diana shows Prince it. Yeah. And so yeah. There's a through line, and at the end you bring them together, and it's like ta-da. But your main story is your Batman v Superman.
I don't think they're going to do that, because we're talking about Warner Brothers.
But the thing is that Warner Brothers has a really, really long history of making movies.
But Warner Brothers doesn't understand superheroes.
Well, but
they don't understand. Well, they don't understand the animal they've got in the cage.
Well, but we are basing everything off one movie, which is Geeky really can't do. For all the dislike of Man of Steel, or all the people who loved Man of Steel, the fact of the matter is, it is not a good representation of where they're going, because it's one.
Right, but
size is way too small.
But if you factor in the, you know, if you take into consideration the fact that Green Lantern was supposed to be part of this cinematic universe.
Yeah, but Green Lantern has the same problem as, like, say, a Wolverine movie. Okay, the two Wolverine movies, and the second one was better.
Oh, much.
To be sure.
Much.
But the first one was garbage. Yeah.
Well, did you see Ryan Reynolds talking about the fact that he signed on to the movie before there was even a script?
Oh, sure.
For Green Lantern?
Oh, sure.
Crazy.
Yeah,
crazy. But see, this is
but there's a
the thing that we can look at with Warner Brothers and DC, and then you stop and consider all of the decisions on the DC Comics side. You know, the editorial interference and all of the problems of creative. Granted, that doesn't impact the movies.
Right.
But it creates an overall impression of incompetence.
Oh, sure.
That's our entry point for DC.
I have not, I think I've defended the horror lines of the New 52. You know, I think I've defended those quite a bit. But you haven't heard me defend much else in
New
52.
No.
Although I have to say, it's nice to see Superman will be wearing clothing again, as opposed to armor.
Mm. And you see Constantine the Hellblazer is one of the new titles in the
DC.
And that's something we can talk about in the Rogues Gallery next time we record one of those. That is our podcast where we talk about the DC Comics side of things. Here's what we're going to do now. We're going to take a break, refill coffee cups, and get cough drops and all sorts of what all. And you can hear a message from our sponsor here, SuperheroStuff.com. They are purveyors of fine licensed merchandise.
Some really great stuff over there.
Including Spider-Man stuff.
Yes.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, we've talked about how you put Spider-Man into the overall Marvel universe. Now, when we get back, we're gonna look at more how this impacts the Marvel universe, because there is already some changes afoot, and we will discuss that when H2O continues right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Oh, this is so cool!
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from SuperheroStuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to SuperheroStuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at SuperheroStuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC-flavored morsels at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio, but we're only doing this until Joss Whedon puts us in an Avengers movie. Yeah.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we are talking about The Amazing Spider-Man, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, the webhead, the web-slinger. I've ran out.
I almost did Spider Pig, and I didn't do it.
Spider Pig.
Oh my!
Does whatever a Spider Pig does. So the timeline: July 23rd, 2014.
Yep.
Sony sets out Sinister Six with a release date of 2016. Amazing Spider-Man 3 goes back to 2018 for a release date. And this is when people started sitting there thinking, wonder why they did that. August 4th, 2014, Sony, there was word about a female-led Marvel superhero movie.
Right.
A lot of people thinking maybe that could be a Spider-Woman or Black Cat.
Right.
Were really the two contenders there because Gwen was dead.
Right.
October 8th, 2014, rumor Sony and Marvel in delicate early talks to share Spider-Man. This was the very first that we started hearing that there was any kind of a discussion at all going on between them.
Right.
And I have to wonder how much of this, before the Sony hack, how much of this was fans sitting there saying, Marvel, do something. You know, it's because there was such a hue and cry. Then, again, on October 8th, Sinister Six may feature a new Spider-Man. This was the first indication we may have a different actor playing Peter Parker.
Right.
October 31st, the Spider spinoff might have a female team.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we first started hearing about Glass Ceiling
right.
as a group thing. November 11th, 2014, Sony possibly eyeing an Aunt May film. This is when we first started hearing about Spider-May or Aunt May or Aunt May was a spy or
some of the spin-off media, none of the mainstream stuff has had her being more of a it's a great Wold Newton.
Yeah, kind of
thing with her.
It's like Alfred.
Yeah.
Alfred Pennyworth being a, MI6 and stuff. December 10th, 2014, Marvel and Sony discuss Spider-Man's Captain America Civil War involvement. This is when the Sony Pictures email hacks first came to light. Revealed that talks had taken place between Amy Pascal proposing that Marvel produce the new Spidey trilogy. This is interesting because if that came from her, and she's the one that's in charge of all of what all is all of this. If she's sitting here saying, we should probably let Marvel do it, you've got your top production person at Sony acknowledging that they can't get it right, that they need help. That's going to be the public perception.
Well, yeah, I think that. In all fairness to them, they didn't make a terrible movie, but it didn't give them the numbers they wanted.
They didn't make the money they wanted, right.
And which is a whole other story, by the way.
Right. And then December 12th, 2 days later, the email hacks keep coming out. Comic Book Resources had brought all of this information together into one thing, talking about all of these different things. The fact that Marvel doesn't want Andrew Garfield... Captain America, the Winter Soldier directors, Joe and Anthony Russo, had expressed interest in producing the Spider-Man films. So there was interest on the Marvel side on some of this. December 19th, 2014, Marvel wants Spider-Man in the Infinity War movies. This was another leaked email from the hack. Basically said, they want to figure out some way to include Spider-Man in the Infinity War, Avengers 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And January 14th, Sony denies Spider-Man Avengers rumor. All of that, Sony hack everything. Sony comes out and says, no, there's no deal. There's no talks. There's no nothing. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. February 9th, Marvel and Sony announce this deal. And I have to wonder if Sony was the lead on this in the decision to release this news at 8:30 at night on a Monday night, hoping it'll skate under the radar? I mean,
well, no, honestly,
how do you make this decision? How do you make this announcement that at that time of day?
Well, but the thing is that it, no, the and you lose the, the In politics, you put this stuff out on Friday.
5 o'clock after, Friday. Yeah.
5 o'clock Friday, because it disappears. Well, no, let me qualify that.
Sort of.
They used to. Back when it was all network.
And newspapers.
And before the internet. So they still do it. It doesn't make any sense. So there's no time. There is no time you can release it, and it's not going to disappear. You can release it at 3 o'clock in the morning. The Wheel of Time.
Wheel of Time. Yeah,
thing.
The Wheel
okay,
of Time pilot.
On.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not going to be noticed.
It almost wasn't.
Yeah,
you but know, it got picked up, and somebody looked at it and went, "Wait, what?"
Yeah,
and then is when then it
sure,
when it
but
blew
I mean,
up,
but you can't hide any if you put something out through a media.
Yeah,
pick a media; it doesn't matter. We put something out; it's like, oh, and it's like this. It's like, wait a minute, Marvel's going to be involved with making the next Spider-Man picture.
Yeah,
boom,
and that's what happened
exactly.
And the other thing that makes me think that this was Sony's play as opposed to Marvel's is that there wasn't an event. There wasn't any kind of get up on stage or go to the comic book shop, because the last two major announcements that Marvel has done, you had Kevin Feige, Del Capitan with Phase 3, and you had the top dogs. You had Axel Alonso and Tom Brevoort at Midtown Comics in New York when they announced all the big universe smashes.
Sony benefits the most from this. Sony benefits the most from this because they still are, they got the distribution rights, quote unquote, creative control. You know, all
we
the
all know that's a sham.
Yeah, well, all the things. I mean, Sony still ends up with their name on it. It's still a Sony picture.
Yeah.
And right now, in all, you know, whether or not however you feel about Sony movies in general, you know, after the hack, they've got problems. And I mean, that's a huge, huge problem for a studio.
Yes.
And so, quite frankly, this is really beneficial for them. And I think that they probably looked at this and went, you know what? Maybe they had actually decided to have those talks with Marvel and sat there and went, you know what? We're not going to do this. The hack comes along and it's like, well, honestly, looking at this, this would be a good thing for us right now.
It's a PR thing rather than a financial thing at this point.
Well, I think it's definitely a financial thing as well, but it is it's certainly a PR thing.
I think the PR takes priority over the financial at this point, though. If the hack hadn't happened, then things would definitely be playing out a completely different way.
Oh, I think so. But I think that ultimately it's looking at this and going, okay, if we are going to keep telling Spider-Man stories, if we are going to keep the rights to this, then we, especially with what's going on in our world right now, then we need to try and have it be part of a bigger thing. And we know that Marvel movies are doing really, really well.
Yeah.
And so we're going to bring in the people behind Marvel Studios, and they're going to help us make this film, and everybody wins.
And you notice...
And we win especially.
And you notice there's no mention of Avi Arad anywhere.
No, there isn't. There isn't. And I think that this may be kind of the end.
It could be.
For... Maybe not the end, but...
At least as far as Spider-Man is concerned.
Maybe, yeah.
But I think also, too, I mean, you look at the greater impact, because now people are saying, because some of this news, not only is Spider-Man going over into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but there is the possibility, and people are starting to ask where this could happen, where Marvel Cinematic Universe characters could show up in a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, sure.
From Sony. Mm-hmm. Now, given that they all already have all of their contracts in place, this is just the beginning of a huge chain of dominoes that's about to fall in the Marvel plan.
Right.
That has to fall a certain way in order for us to get to Infinity War. I mean, these guys have this lined out. Now, granted, they don't have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, so there's time to adjust. But we're already seeing the impact, because with the Spider-Man solo film going in 2017, that bumps everything back. So Thor moves back to Black Panther's date to, you know, but Thor moves back, Black Panther moves back, Captain Marvel moves back. All of them get pushed. Now, Infinity War still has their dates in place the same as they used to, the same as they already did.
Right.
Those haven't moved yet. But everything up to that point gets pushed back. So, does that mean that we're going to get some retooling of the Marvel Universe now to accommodate Spider-Man more? Or is it still just going to be a peripheral thing where maybe he shows up on a newscast or a cameo or something like that, and he gets his solo film and whatnot, and we just get an, oh, by the way, mention that he's in this universe now? And then what does that do with the Inhumans movie getting pushed back? How does that impact Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is now rolling out Inhumans,
right,
in anticipation of the Inhumans movie, which is now going to come later by 6 months.
Right. You know, and it has the potential to completely change everything. But at the same time, I think that, honestly, it's going to be a lot more of the Marvel Universe. Now with more Spider-Man. And then over on Sony, it's going to be Spider-Man, now produced by Marvel. You know? I don't think it's going to be the earth-shattering. I mean, yeah, I think some dates are going to move, some stuff's going to shift. But I just can't see them. I can't see them derailing the plan they already have in place. And maybe, you know, I could be completely wrong on this, but it just seems like such a dangerous thing to do.
Well, and the other thing too is, if Sony has, if how do I ask this? If Spider-Man is still primarily a Sony production, mm-hmm, granted Marvel is involved now,
right?
But given that we were already getting Sony Marvel Pictures and Marvel Studios Marvel Pictures,
right,
together in the same year,
mm-hmm,
why would you need to push back the Marvel Studios stuff in favor of Spider-Man unless there's already an idea of, here's how this is all going to work, and this has to happen for us to move this, and we've got to move this piece here in order to accommodate this element in a story? Somebody's already got some sort of an idea, is what I'm thinking.
Well, I think, you know, honestly, if they were talking, if, you know, if the discussions of potentially bringing Spider-Man back into the Marvel Universe, you know, somebody at the creative side of things is going, okay, if that happens, then I want to put him here and here and here and now. There was a writer somewhere going, I have an idea.
It's like the Department of Defense having all sorts of different plans and scenarios for alien invasions.
Sure.
Oh, we have to pick out the file B-47.
It may never happen, but wouldn't you rather have us sit there and go, all right, let's see, they're from what solar system, okay, and they're bringing round, what kind of weapons? All
round
right,
UFOs, not square, that's this.
Exactly, that's pull file, you know.
Yeah, well, and I think that could be part of it, especially given that Feige is involved in both now.
You know, well,
he's being brought in as a co-producer. I think that he's probably already been thinking about this.
Well, even if they were just, you know, had no expectation of it ever happening, there was, at some point, there was a conversation, sitting around going, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we had Spider-Man, we could put him here. And everyone said, yeah, that would be really, really cool. The lawyers would never let it happen. Yeah. And then all of a sudden,
it's like Christmas.
The lawyers called. Yes. They said it could happen.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And you know that meme that shows up all the time, meanwhile, over at Marvel?
Right.
You've got to wonder if that's actually going on right now over there, because, you know, Marvel wins. I mean, yes, this is a good move for Sony.
Yeah.
Yes, this makes sense for Sony to do this, but Marvel wins.
Now, here's the question. Does this become a model for spreading your content, your characters out over a... I don't think it does, by the way. But could this become a model for spreading your character base out among different studios, thus reducing the financial impact on everybody?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But we've already seen that there are these, you know, some of these studios are cooperating and making pictures. We're getting, a Ben-Hur remake,
which is
a multi-studio thing.
Yeah, because if that was the case, then it would be Sony and Disney, not Sony and Marvel.
Well, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So I think, I mean, it's...
But see, the other question is now, you want to talk about what this does to the model, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
You've already got people saying, can they do that with Fox now?
Right.
Can they do it with Fox? And that, well, what
about the X-Men? And that's kind of where I was
going. So. What's going to happen with that? Because that's the same kind of deal that Fox has in place, is we make the movies to keep the rights.
Right, but I think the difference is that Fox just had Days of Future Past, which did just fine, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in a position, they're not currently
hurting,
dealing with the problems that Sony was having. I mean, so this was kind of a perfect storm for Sony. You had a second Spider-Man, which is not as successful as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You had the hack. You had all of this stuff going on. This was, in a way, you know, great timing for everybody involved. You know, quote unquote great, because I mean,
great being an ironic word,
right?
There.
But I mean, ultimately, you know, for Fox, they aren't in that same situation now. Say Fantastic Four comes out and it doesn't do well, or it doesn't do as well as they want, and quite frankly, I don't know what their expectations are. I mean, I think if I were Fox.
Well, and speculation is even that one of the reasons why Marvel canceled the Fantastic Four titles was to pull the rug out from under Fox so they wouldn't have as much support. Now, Marvel's since denied that.
Well, that's the
company line where you're going to deny it. But, you know, there is speculation
that's such a stupid idea. I mean, it's just so dumb. I mean, that's...
the thing about it is, though, not really.
But
from a creative standpoint, I mean, not from a business standpoint, because you still have the guy, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, that is in charge. He's one of the major shareholders at Disney,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't like the people at Fox. And some people have even said, I wouldn't put it past him to sit there and tell Marvel to cancel the Fantastic Four titles just to get back at Fox.
Yeah,
but it may not even be a thought-out, planned thing. It could just be an off-the-cuff, cancel the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, you know what? To me, it's just so dumb. It's just, I mean, it really
doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Well, that's true. But at the same time, it's one of those things that is just so bloody stupid. Because and we've talked about this before. We just talked about it a couple weeks ago on Rogues Gallery.
Yeah.
With Bob. Which is, how many people read comic books? The people going to see the Fantastic Four movie don't care that the comic book is canceled. All they're doing is hurting themselves if they do that.
And by the way, folks, that would be Bob Rozakis,
yes.
who was the answer man back in the 80s and 90s. He was former director of production for DC Comics back in the day.
Yeah, so it would be such a poor decision financially and creatively. The reason you cancel the title is because it's not selling.
Unless... let me throw this out. Let me throw this out. If part of the deal requires the publication of a title that that includes the characters the studio has, so I say 20th Century Fox has the rights to the X-Men, has the rights to the Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. and the conditions of Fox making Fantastic Four movies are: A, they have to make a movie within 7 years of one of the other to the other.
Mm-hmm.
B, there has to be an active title in publication over at Marvel Comics. One or the other doesn't apply. That weakens Fox's hold on the rights.
It's possible, and I suppose you could find that could be a contract written that way. But that just seems like an incredibly bizarre contract thing to put in. Not to mention the kind of thing that would make a lawyer look at that contract and go... So what stops you from stopping publishing the title and screwing us?
Well, unless... You know what I mean? Well, and they put it in there, you know, the sales threshold as the trigger. You know, Fantastic Four goes below this level. You know, our standard line, if it goes below this for so long,
right.
the title is canceled. If that's the case, and your movie does... X and so performance wise, then the rights revert back. You know, it maybe they are playing a long game here with that in not necessarily setting up the same kind of perfect storm that Sony is having to deal with, but making conditions such that it would be easier to pull the Fantastic Four back into Marvel's house.
I think it's possible, maybe. But it seems like such an arcane, convoluted thing that you could get so many things could go wrong on your end if you were the ones trying to get your characters back.
Yeah.
That it just,
well, I mean, if the book sells, then they keep the rights. I mean, what other trigger could you have?
Plus, is that I don't think you would. If I were Fox, I'd be like, no, you can't. This has nothing to do with the comics. This has nothing to do with it has nothing to do with sales amounts. This has to do with every other rights thing. We are required to make a picture within X amount of time.
Yeah,
and if we don't, you get the rights back, and there you go. I mean, because if I were the lawyers over at Fox, I'd be like, no, I'm sorry, that's stupid. No, are you kidding me? No, because they're entertainment lawyers. They're not gonna. It's a great conspiracy theory, and it might even be true.
But you never know.
But from a smell test, I mean, it just seems to me like it's like, no, there's just no entertainment lawyer is gonna sit there and go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
They like making money. They like making large sums of money. And I like making large sums of money, too.
I don't think I've ever made a large sum of money.
I failed to go to law school and get a degree in entertainment law. So I clearly did not plan well. But still, it's...
But you have to wonder what the Spider-Man Sony deal looks like to the Fox people.
I think the Spider-Man Sony deal to the Fox people looks like a let's see what happens, because if it works, if the next Spider-Man picture ends up being huge,
and you know it will,
probably will, then you have Fox going, hey,
can we play in this sandbox too?
Let's play in the sandbox too.
Yeah.
And again, if it's beneficial for Sony and for Marvel. Oh, so Sony, Marvel, Disney, then Fox will sit there and go, huh, beneficial? Okay. And I think that at the end of the day, it's going to come down to ticket sales.
And I have to wonder if Simon Kinberg might be the one to trigger that over at Fox.
Maybe.
Because the word is that Fantastic Four, X-Men, and Deadpool all live in the same universe.
That's what we hear.
So, if Fox, let's play the if game. If Sony and Marvel make this Spider-Man movie and it does a bajillion dollars, because everybody who's
how many zeros is that?
It's a lot. And Fox sees it, and
all
Fox
the zeros.
Says, "Okay, we want a piece of that action."
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for the X-Men and Deadpool? Because if they're in a shared universe,
right,
and the Fantastic Four go into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, does that automatically bring the mutants to the MCU? Do we eventually get Wolverine in the Avengers?
Well, possibly, but we have to justify two different Quicksilvers.
I don't know.
Which is, you know how you fix that? You only mention one Quicksilver.
Oh, sure.
You never mention the other one. Ever again.
You pick one actor to play him, and he's been the same Quicksilver.
Always
for both
been
of them.
Quicksilver forever. Because Days of Future Past was a time travel picture.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. It's called hand wavium.
That's right. Our transmitters are made out of hand wavium here. That's what I said. That's my story I'm sticking to.
Okay, fair enough.
Pay no attention to the sacrificial altar.
Where is your kid, by the way? Here at Sci-Fi for Me, we do not endorse child sacrifice.
No, he's with his mother. Okay, it is going to be interesting to see
the next few years for all of this, for DC,
yeah,
for Marvel, for Sony, for Fox, all of this stuff.
Well, who's got Namor? Who's got the Submariner rights? Universal?
Oh, wow.
What are they going to do?
They'll incorporate into their Universal Monsters movies.
Would they even realize?
The new Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I wonder, do they even realize that they still have those rights?
Oh, God,
somebody's got to be over there
sure.
Hey, maybe we should make a phone call.
Honestly, the only way, if you've got Namor, the only way he really, really works is you either completely divorce him from the rest of the Marvel Universe and just tell, which you could do.
Which they've tried before.
I know you.
It didn't work.
Or, I mean, you could do it. I think there's ways to make it happen. But you sit there and go, yeah. You know, and reincorporate it.
Well, and who's to say that they won't?
I know.
Because now there's precedent. Because you know we're in this time now, where you have things happening what's never happened before.
That's right. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
and it's like, you know, because you know, like you said with Ben-Hur, back in the day, you'd never have studios working together to produce a movie. I mean, it never happened. It's unthinkable. Mm-hmm. When we were growing up, you had 20th Century Fox, you had Universal, you had Orion, you had
United Artists.
United Artists and MGM and Sony and all these, Paramount, and none of them played together.
No.
Ever. And then you had, you know, starts consolidating, you know, Sony and Columbia and all
the TriStar. Or they're going bankrupt or,
yeah,
you know.
And MGM and United Artists are all together now and all this. And that's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Sony, Columbia, TriStar now all live together because they're owned by the same company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Disney, Buena Vista, and you know, Touchstone Pictures, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have competing studios working together to make movies, and now you do because they've gotten so stinking expensive, for one.
Well, that, but they also, but the return on investment.
Yeah.
The potential is so big now.
Yes.
That you can sit there and go, it's worth it.
And now, with this deal, you have an opening. That door has been kicked open now for these other studios that own Marvel rights.
Right.
To go back to Marvel and say, hey, your pie looks better than our pie.
Your pie is made of happiness and large sums of money.
can we have the recipe and maybe you help us make one of those pies? I wonder if Universal might do that.
Well,
because Namor has been so completely under the radar this entire time.
Sure.
Nobody's talking about
it. You know what they're going to do? You know what I bet they do?
They'll bring him back after Aquaman does stuff.
They're going to look at Aquaman and see what happens because the characters are so, they're not, I mean, they've got X number of similarities, but there are a lot of differences, right? So you could have them both exist in the movie theaters and probably be okay. But yeah, they're going to see how Aquaman does.
Yeah. Well, and we will see how all of this does. We'll keep an eye on it, of course. And I'm sure we will revisit this topic several times over the next couple of years. So that's going to do it for us this time. Next week, issue number 50. Episode number 50.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I was talking to somebody about, you know, what we should do for 50, and they're like, don't they normally do celebrations at 100? I was like, you mean we gotta wait?
Do we have another 50 in us?
I hope so.
Yes, I do too.
I hope so. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. Timothy Harvey, Jason Hunt, and you should go visit superherostuff.com. And in the meantime, make sure you subscribe to Sci-Fi for Me Radio. We are available over on iTunes, Double Twist, OneCast, Stitcher. And there is an RSS feed over there at scififorme.com where you can find the latest news. Don't forget, also, we have the Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast. They talk about Gotham. They talk about Sleepy Hollow. We have the Echo Chamber podcast where we talk about all things DC.
Yep.
Level 117 where we talk about Marvel stuff. Right now, we're looking at Agent Carter, and then we'll come back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then after that, probably Daredevil.
Yeah.
And the overall Marvel cinematic universe, but lots of stuff that we talk about all the time.
So many things.
And we would love for you to join the conversation. If you want to, you can leave a comment or you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. And that's going to do it for us this week. We will be back next week with another episode of H2O.
Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.